I think planned giving is one of the most interesting and exciting, I said one of the most, not the most, one of the most interesting and exciting things a person can become involved in. Because rarely do you have an opportunity to work with people who are sophisticated.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. My conscience just smote me. Rarely do you have a chance to work with people who are sophisticated and have resources and are motivated to see them utilized to glorify the Lord. And there you are as a facilitator, someone to help them accomplish what they want to accomplish. When you talk in terms of a significant gift, all you can do is give credit to the Lord because it's not your money that's given. And if you're talking about a lot of money, you certainly can't motivate anybody to give that kind of funds. So the Lord gets the credit, and the Lord's work has prospered, and it's rather exciting. Also, that's off the subject. Anyway, standing here before this group of people, I feel a bit insecure. For a number of reasons, a lot of you know me. All of you know me, in fact. Know me well. And all of you have ministered to me very, very significantly. And so, as somebody once said, I definitely feel like a lion in a den of Daniels. But I do hope that what I have to share tonight will be helpful and encouraging and give you a sense, if you don't already have it, give you a sense of direction and some goals for the coming years in terms of financial management and budgeting and so on. Jesus was very emphatic in Matthew 6:25 through 34 when he said that we shouldn't worry about clothes and food, etc. But there is a great deal of difference between worrying and planning, isn't there? In fact, if you look at the Bible, you see it's filled with plans, God's plans. And the most significant being when Jesus said, "It is finished." And that's the plan that brought us salvation. So planning is scriptural. Worrying is a lack of faith. The facts are that many people today are not living, are living in poverty. Many Americans are living close to it, trying to subsist on Social Security and not much more. In fact, I got involved with a lady here in Colorado Springs who passed away not too long ago, and she didn't have Social Security. She had $10,000. When I met her and was living off of it and lived off it for about 2 years. It was rather amazing before she passed away. Widows are particularly vulnerable to financial problems. And ladies, I've got good news and bad news for you. 59% of women aged 65 and older are widows. Guys, that's good news and bad news for us, too. The good news is, statistically, we'll be with the Lord first. The bad news is our wives will have to carry on for a period of time. We'll probably have to carry on for a period of time without us. How long do you think the average widow's inheritance lasts? We'll turn this into a quiz.
18 months.
Okay. Do I hear more or less?
3 years.
3 years. Any other ideas? Well, Skip, you must have read my notes. Year and a half. Now, of course, what the average widow has and what constitutes the average widow may be, that's a question we can't address. But the point is that funds don't last too long. I was talking to a lady at a conference here 2 summers ago whose husband passed away, was a dentist. Had a good practice, had a sizable estate, died of lung cancer within 90 days of being here at a conference, and didn't smoke, by the way. Her sizable estate was down to $40,000 in 2 years. Mismanagement, mistakes, poor advice, and some kids that wanted their inheritance now. And, it was interesting to see how it happened, but how can you help someone like that? Well, you can help them personally, I guess. Okay. In contrast, Proverbs 21:20 says, "The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets." And that's sometimes my budget. Right? Proverbs 21:20. "The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets." Proverbs 22:3 says, "A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep on going and suffer for it or suffer the consequences." Proverbs 22:3. So there is ample scriptural basis for saving and for planning for the future. I guess my goal in sharing all this is summarized in Proverbs 14:8, where it says, "The wise man looks ahead. The fool attempts to fool himself and won't face the facts." And if I were to subtitle this seminar, it's "Let's Face the Facts," or this workshop, "Let's Face the Facts." Now, what are the facts? Let's find out what the facts are. What? Living, yes. Thank you, Jerry. Proverbs 21:20. Proverbs 22:3 and Proverbs 14:8. You know, I'm impressed by the difference between my parents and Carolyn's, my wife's parents, all of which are with the Lord now, all of whom are with the Lord now. My folks were urban. They lived in San Francisco, among other major cities. And when they retired, they needed a great deal of money. They needed a steady cash flow to sustain themselves. And it was provided. The Lord blessed. They had adequate income. In contrast, Carolyn's folks were rural. They owned a farm in East Texas. And I was always amazed at how little money they spent. Of course, also they didn't have much, but they didn't need money. And which are we? Which are you? Which am I? I know what I am. I'm an urban person with a rural mentality. Right? I believe I've got a farm someplace that's going to support me. But I don't. I've got, you know, what? 60-foot lot or maybe a 90-foot lot. I'm not sure how big it is. But in the north of town, it won't grow. It'll grow weeds, but not grass. It's guaranteed. So in facing the facts, we need to figure out where we're coming from. Now, some experts, and that's in quotes, estimate that a retired family or person or individual needs between 50 to 60% of their pre-retirement salary in order to maintain their standard of living. Now, I'll repeat that. Some experts say that a retired family needs between 50 and 60% of their pre-retirement salary to maintain their standard of living. Now, that gives you a great deal of assurance, doesn't it? Especially when other experts say, well, it's more like 70 to 80%. Which set of experts is right? Well, that goes back to that question about the average widow. That goes back to the question of each of us individually. Are we average? I won't guarantee you we're not. Each one of us are unique. And we need to personally determine what kind of financial resources we are going to need in the future to meet the goals that we have set for ourselves or we feel the Lord is leading us into. I was in this room, 2 weeks ago for a reception for, I forgot his name. Roy Robertson, thank you. Terrible. For Roy. Roy has an outstanding retirement plan. He's got it all figured out. He's going to Hong Kong, and he's going to learn a new Chinese dialect while he's there. And I can't all remember all the details, but he plans to be there when the communists take over. Now, that is a great retirement plan. Does Roy meet the average? No, he doesn't. And you know what? None of us do. My point in sharing all this is to emphasize when you read books on retirement or whatever you want to call the future, when and if it ever comes, don't be misled by what I call platitudes like the figures I've given you, because they may not apply to you. In fact, they won't. And if you look at your current salary, say it's $3,000 a month, and you say, well, I can get by on $1,500, you may be in for a rude shock. But we'll get into that later on. Okay? Now, many people can get by during their years of steady employment without a budget, because cost of living increases and salary raises and flexibility allows them to make up for any financial mistakes they made. They may have bought a lemon for a car, that is, or the furnace may have gone out in the house, and, well, no big deal, because we'll just tighten our belt and, and next year we'll pay it off. But that's because up to this point, most of us have experienced fairly steady salary increases. Our income has gone up. But in the future, our income may drop. Most people experience that. And if we're not planning on it, if we don't anticipate it, we may find ourselves in for some rude shocks and some unpleasant experiences. Let's take a look at, and I may be using the wrong terminology, I'm saying how to develop a successful retirement plan. Does that bother anybody? If it is, I apologize. How to develop a successful retirement plan. Am I blocking anybody's view? I'm not. I've lost weight. It's worked. Develop a timetable for your plan. Act now. In other words, develop the timetable now. Now, Roy Robertson, I think it's a classic illustration, not a good illustration, not typical by any means, but a good illustration. He has a plan in mind. He has his course laid out. But when do you expect to cut back? Do you expect to cut back? I was talking to a fellow who's 72 years old, in San Luis Obispo, and he's a plan-giving donor, and we're working on some arrangements. And I asked him if he would like to be a sponsor for a plan-giving seminar in the area. He's a very prominent person in the community. I thought he might be a perfect person to help me test some ideas I've got. He laughed, and he said, well, Russ, he said, I never thought it happened to me, but I'm cutting back. If you want me to take a Sunday school class for, 1 or 2 weeks, I'll do it. But a quarter, I just don't have the energy anymore. Well, develop a plan, develop a timetable. When is the earliest you think you might cut back? Clarify and prayerfully define your goals. That outline isn't very good, but what are your minimum and maximum goals? What do you want to accomplish in the next 20, 30 years? Minimum, maximum, talking in terms of treading water or walking on water, if you pardon the pun or dumb statement.
Right, when you talk about cutting back
what? Activity. When do you anticipate leaving Navigator staff? When do you anticipate going part-time? When do you anticipate a change? Cutting back may be a poor choice of a poor term. When do you anticipate a change that will affect your income?
And then affect things that relate to that?
Yes.
In ministry,
activities, personal, visiting kids, everything.
Okay. You're not talking about financial goals, you're talking about activity.
I'm talking about, well, any activity will usually cost money. And not on this outline, but another one, I have the idea of putting a price tag on that goal. Take advantage of the compounding effect of money. I understand that somebody once asked Einstein what was the most marvelous thing he ever learned, and he was supposed to. I can't believe he really said this, but he was supposed to have said the compounding effect of money. The Einstein. Number three.
Are you going to talk more about that?
Yes. Take advantage of the tax laws. By that I mean defer while you are paying higher taxes than you will be now in the future. You are paying higher taxes now than you probably will be in the future. When you have the opportunity, to defer some of your salary, some of your income through IRAs, TSA, deferred comp, or what have you, take advantage of that. Because that will speed up the growth of your funds. Have a realist. Okay, pay yourself first to defer income to the future. Have a realistic idea of your future ability and desire to work. Some of us are workers, and we're used to it. But we have to recognize that there may be a point in time in the future when we will want to or have to cut back for physical reasons. Learn to cope with inflation. What has been the inflation rate this last year or so? 3%? About 4 is what I've heard, but same idea. Some people are talking about a much lower rate of inflation. Why? Because energy prices have been so low. But the rest of the economy has been perking along about 3 or 4%. Inflation in the past 35 years has averaged 3.75.
Per year.
The last 10 years, 8.5. I saw a study in which some economists traced inflation back for 2,000 years. It's been a fact for a steady rate of inflation for 2,000 years using various tax records. Be persistent. One of the greatest hindrances to financial security is giving up, changing course. Be persistent. And then don't be gullible. Learn the advantages and disadvantages of different investments. And we'll talk about that briefly also later on. I would recommend that you get if you don't already have a budget, that you prepare a budget. Not necessarily using the handouts I gave you, but on a columnar pad, do some work, determining where your funds are going. Now, at the last seminar, a few people mentioned that we should have a greater emphasis on the actual budgeting aspect. So let me just talk about that very briefly. If you're not already working off of a budget on paper, the simplest way to do it is to take your checkbook, your credit card slips, your records, where your records are incomplete, your memory, your hopes, your wishes, your desires, and write out appropriate amounts of income that you are spending or receiving and spending total for the year. And then simply divide that by 12. And you come up with an average monthly amount. Now, there's certain weaknesses in that approach, because obviously if you live in Colorado, your utility bills are much higher in the wintertime than the summertime. Unless you have the castle for a lawn, or the lawn catch. Skip, yours is probably very high. Water, that is. So you should proportionately decrease your summer expenses and increase your winter expenses for natural gas and what have you. Conversely, if you live in Phoenix, I would assume the opposite would be true. Your winter bills are rather low and your summer bills are quite high because of air conditioning and what have you. So you need to make adjustments in that 12-month average to reflect what your expenses are, what you project your expenses to be on a monthly basis. You know what your year's expenses should be, but then what your monthly expenses should be. The same is true with your expenses. I said expenses and I was talking about income. The same is true with your expenses and income, both. Well, this is 1987. And let's say that I'm 60 years old and I plan to retire in 5 years, 65. That may be nobody's plan and nobody's age here, but let's say that's the picture. What figure would I put in the retirement column under salary? I'm retired at age 65. How much salary would I list under retirement? Okay, let's assume I'm not going part-time. I have no other income. Carolyn has no other income. All right, so here let's say I'm making $30,000, and here I'm making zero. What about Social Security? Hilda will tell us all about that. You already did. All right. But there's a figure in there. For the husband, and if Carolyn has worked, my wife, and qualifies or is eligible, she may receive some. But let's assume she hasn't worked in a long time and she receives nothing.
She would receive a portion of your benefits.
Thank you. All right. Okay. That's right. The Navigator pension would be something. I do have a savings account someplace. I'm going to get some interest. And so on. See, you go through and even though I'm planning to retire in 92? I use $1987. That's my point in all this. Because I don't know what my I don't know what inflation will do or what the cost of living will be 5 years from now, but I do know what it is today. And so as I do my planning, I do all my planning in $87. This year, or if you do your planning next year, in $88. So whatever, you use those dollars because you understand them. I remember going to the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry, I think, as a little kid and seeing a piece of pie and a cup of coffee on sale for 10 cents in a mock-up of an old drugstore. You know, well, I'm sure at that time I couldn't have anticipated, I don't know what pie and coffee now cost, $2.50, $3. You can't anticipate what the future is going to be, I mean, in terms of costs. Dividends, sale of assets, and other income of any kind that you may have. You do the same thing with the other areas in your budget. This particular outline is divided into fixed expenses and variable expenses, and some people will debate what's fixed and what's variable. But mortgage, do you plan to stay where you are? Is your home paid for? Or when will it be paid for? Will it be paid for in 5 years? Do you plan to move to Florida or to Phoenix? If you do, will you pay cash for your home or will you have a mortgage or will you rent? Mortgage and rent be the same thing. Property taxes, personal. Down here, automobile. First under variable. Do you have two cars? Is one a nav car and one a personal car? This is where the trick or people can get the averages don't work. For most people, when they retire, they sell one car and keep one. Their car expenses go down, don't they? For those of us on nav staff, if we have a company car, we lose a car, we'll lose that one, keep our personal, or if we only have one car and it happens to be a company car, our expenses go up. So give some careful thought as a couple to what your future circumstances are going to cost Again, Leroy, the idea of putting a cost on those goals or those plans that we were talking about earlier. What about clothing purchases? How will your retirement or change in activities affect your wardrobe? Now, Jerry Bridges and I, have got it made. When we retire, we will see a savings because we won't be wearing these as much as we are now. So our clothing costs and our laundry or upkeep costs will go down. But if you don't dress, you know, like this on a regular basis, your clothing costs may stay the same. They probably won't go up. Jerry.
Russ, just to enlarge on what you said about the ad auto, the fact that there will come a point, and you know, we were discussing yesterday about who has an ad auto. Sure, if you're on full-time staff, you have an ab auto. It's for sure that when you're fully retired, you don't. We don't know about the in-between, but let's get down to that fully retired status as far as the navigators are concerned. You're no longer on the payroll. Then you will not have an ab car, and the insurance and so forth that you're now paying on the ministry budget is going to be paid out of your retirement income. Same is true with certain other expenses. For example, I suspect that most people handle their books and subscriptions out of ministry funds because most of those books and subscriptions are ministry-related. But there will come a time when you won't have that ministry account to pay that, and that will also come out of retirement funds. So what I would suggest is to go through not only their personal expenses, but also the ministry expenses, and project those forward into that retirement date and decide, well, some of those I won't have anymore. They go just with being a navigator staff. Others I will still have just for my lifestyle and ministry style, but now I'm going to have to pay those out of my retirement income.
Another example of that is medical insurance. Hilda's going to talk about this tomorrow, but I believe there may be a portion of our medical costs are, we'll have to pick up those personally once we retire. Not all, but a portion. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's a good point. Yes.
I have a question. Is there any compensation to a navigator staff widow? Is there a care for any way through the navigator ministry? Okay. So she could depend, I mean, she would have that much to depend on.
Well, she would. That's correct. Now, the single spouse, you know, most, as I pointed out, most of four out of five wives will be widows. But as you do your projections, it's also prudent, in my opinion, to do a projection for the single spouse. What happens if I predecease Carolyn? If I blow an aorta? You know, what income will she have and what expenses will she have? And it could be quite different than the income and expenses both of us would have together. I'm sure she wouldn't keep our house, for example. I shouldn't say we haven't discussed it, but I assume she would. From what she says, she wouldn't. club expense. What other expenses? Community expenses. Another illustration of areas that that a person frequently represents as savings in retirement that may not be a savings for us. A navigator staff, that is. Jerry mentioned an area that reminded me of entertainment. A lot of our ministry entertainment right now is ministry related. If we are 100% retired, And if we continue to entertain, that will be that will end up being a personal expense. Other things may stop down towards the bottom: IRA contributions or TSA contributions. If you're 100% retired, you certainly would stop your TSA. By the way, do you all know what the TSA is? Tax shelter annuity. Good. All right. Or IRA contributions can continue, I think, to what, age 70 or 70 and a half? Then they have to stop. If you have a source of earned income, you can continue placing funds in an IRA. Deferred compensation contributions would also stop if you're no longer compensated. So, current year, 87, pardon me. Retirement year, 92. And what would be the impact on a single spouse, whether it's Carolyn or me or one of you? What would be our income? What would be our expenses? This is not an easy task. It's not something you do quickly and perhaps do in an evening. It's not a difficult task, but it takes thought, takes prayer, takes planning. And going back, it really is essential that you have some goals we have some goals in terms of what we want to accomplish in the coming years. And then put a price tag on those. A couple ideas. Life insurance. How much life insurance do you need? Well, how much life insurance do you need now? Well, if you were buying insurance 20 years ago, they'd ask, well, how much can you afford? But you always have life insurance for a purpose. And what is the purpose of my life insurance right now? Well, I've got a wife, I've got two kids who are looking forward to college, I hope. We're looking forward to college for them. I have a mortgage on the house and a few of the things like that. I have some obligations. So my life insurance should meet those obligations, or at least should come close to meeting those, as close as I can afford to meeting those obligations. What will be your life insurance needs at age 65? Talking to a lady quite a few years ago. And she had a rather large life insurance policy, and she was just barely eking things out. I mean, it was, hand to mouth. And suggested that she get rid of the policy. She said, well, what about my kids? I said, well, what about your kids? Well, they're all adults. They're on their own, and they had good incomes. And I said, well, look, if you're concerned about your kids and you want to keep the life insurance policy for them, why don't you suggest that they pay for it? It's going to be a great investment. One of the best they can get. So a little creativity, a little, yes. If you can't afford it, or if it's a financial pressure on you, or you have other uses for that money, and the primary beneficiaries are the kids, and you're motivated to keep it for them, I think a very reasonable thing would be for them to pick up the payment, the premiums. That's right. Or decide to continue to live hand to mouth.
Well, why would it be better that they call you and ask for you than if they had that policy?
Well, the premium would be on you. What was that, Jim?
I said, child, you can't do it not to pay it.
Jim, I think you're right. I think others do too. Well, of course, then the child may not be able to afford to pay it. There's lots of factors. But you might share the premiums with them. Be sure you have adequate medical coverage. Be sure you have adequate medical coverage. Okay. All right. Housing choices. Which is better? Renting or owning? Well, let me ask you a question. Which is more important? Scripture memory, Bible study, hearing the word preached, or memorizing it? Which is more important? They're all equally important. Why? Because they all have different goals. Very specific goals. You memorize the Word of God to make it a part of your thinking. You read the Word of God. Well, these are my goals, to get a panoramic view of the Scripture. You hear the Word of God to get insight from other people. And you study the Word of God to outline it, to digest it, put it that way. All different goals. Which do I want to deny myself of? None. So I do all four. Whoops. What's the goal of renting? Well, it doesn't tie up your capital. You can put it somewhere else. You could have put it in mutual funds the last couple of years and did very, very well. I wouldn't suggest it now, necessarily. You're not tied down to a location. I've always wanted to live in Florida. Not really. But I've always... Anybody live here in Florida? I've always wanted to live in Florida. I get to Florida and it's hot and they got bugs. And they got kids on the beach in the springtime. And, you know, I really prefer Minneapolis. Januaries are cold and you feel brisk. I was born in Minneapolis, you know. I don't want to live in either one, to be honest. But some people, you talk to people who retired, sold their home, moved to their dream spot, and discovered it wasn't really what they wanted. And if you're going to do that, go rent for a year or two. Find out if it's really what you want. Not directly exposed to major repairs or pride, not provide, pride of ownership expenses. Anybody have any pride of ownership expenses going on in their homes right now? We do. You know what that is? That's, well, let's put the wallpaper up here and let paint it here and we'll expand it here and we really ought to do some landscaping here and that's pride of ownership expense. Now, if you rent, you're much less motivated to do that because you don't want to make a contribution to the other man's equity or the other person's equity. Renting does expose you to rising costs. Unless you live in New York City and that's so high already, they just put a cap on it. They don't charge, they don't raise the rents. They do, but they have rent control. Ownership gives you security. It's to some people, and this is valid, it's very important for them to own a home. In fact, it's very important for them to own a home free and clear. It may be a good investment. If you bought a home in Colorado Springs, 7 years ago? Or in the Northeast, 5 years ago? Or in California, 15 years ago? Great, great appreciation. Tremendous investment. It may be a tax shelter. Maybe the only tax shelter that survives through ownership, through taxes. It also, but it also may have rising expenses. Taxes go up, insurance goes up, utilities go up, and you're stuck. You can't really change. You can't move to something less expensive. And you could lose flexibility if you own. You might want to sell when the market's down. So I don't know that there is an answer. I think it depends upon the individual and their purposes and what they like and what they prefer. In the area of financial management, Bill Moretz is talking tomorrow. Is that right? Bill, tomorrow morning? Bill's an attorney, works in plan giving. He's a good man. He's a very good estate planner. Bill will talk about a living trust. But through a living trust, you can avoid conservatorship. Now, what's conservatorship? Well, it happens to very, very few people, but when it does happen, it's usually to their disadvantage. And that a conservator is when the court appoints somebody to manage your financial and personal affairs because you've been declared, or the individual has been declared, unable to manage them. I've got a good friend. Some of you may know Don Malmstrom out in California. He has a conservator. And Don can't do what he wants to do anymore, financially. And, well, in fact, where he lives also. Someone is making those decisions for him. Right now, it happens to be a good friend of his who has the same goals and priorities. He's a Christian. But this person is 60. She's almost 70. And she's wearing out. And the next conservator will probably be one appointed by the court who could be an attorney. Could be a, you know, who knows what, the nephew of the judge. Unlikely, but you know, you don't know what you're getting into. Through a living trust, you can designate that person. You could designate one of your kids. What is a living trust? A living trust is a legal document that supplements a will. And Bill will talk about it tomorrow. But the advantage of a living trust is I will die unless the Lord comes. I happen to have a living trust. Since my living trust isn't flesh and blood, it won't die. Therefore, it doesn't go through probate. It doesn't go through probate. A will always goes through probate. There are no tax advantages to a living trust. But there are management, and it also can reduce your expenses, probate expenses. And the delay, and probate has a bad reputation. Probate is considered expensive and time-consuming and a creator of taxes. Those aren't necessarily the case. Probate can be very fast and very speedy if you have a well-planned will. It's up to date and current and meets the needs of your family. But the advantage of a living trust is you can set a trust up. Trust can own your property. I've got a car outside that the Russell P. and Carolyn Reed Trust owns. We don't own it. And when either Carolyn or I die, it'll have no effect on that car at all. And when both of us die, assuming we have the same car, it'll have no effect on the ownership. The trust continues to own it, and somebody else takes over the management. Yes. I'm getting in Bill's territory. A conservator is a person who's responsible for financial management. An executor is the person who is responsible for managing the estate. He is the person who is responsible for the probate process. And they will often hire an attorney, or it could be an attorney, to assist them. So an executor has a relatively short-term responsibility of a few months to a few years, depending on how complex the estate is. A conservator could last for 20 years. And I said earlier, you could appoint that person, and it could be you could appoint an institution like a bank. You could appoint a person like one of your kids, or if you don't want your kids to have that responsibility. You could not specify they don't have it, but you could appoint someone else that you do have confidence in and are available. Not that you don't have confidence in your kids, but they may be in the foreign field. You know, they wouldn't be good conservators. If you're in a living trust, if you are in a limited partnership, and probably those of us who are in them are gradually phasing them out, find out the earliest date that you will be paid both income and principal. And that's true with all of your investments. We'll get on that in a moment. Don't assume you can handle investments during retirement unless you have both, husband and wife, successfully handled them prior to retirement. When was the last time you successfully invested or your spouse successfully invested, what's a $50,000? Well, then why should I expect Carolyn to do well with the proceeds from my insurance? That's assuming I don't blow any order. Well, through a living trust, you can provide that. All right. Okay. Really comforting, huh? Very quickly. I'll tell you what we have done. Let's say I'm normal and I die first. Okay, I'm normal, I die first. What happens to the assets? What happens to the trust? Absolutely nothing.
Carolyn.
Trust, well, in our situation, Carol and I discussed it, and we decided together that she did not have that much expertise in managing assets. I'm not sure I do either, but she felt she had less than I do. So, our trust appoints a trustee to take over someone that we have confidence in. It's that person's name. Well, actually, it's an institution. Well, it's the Navigators. The Navigators are named as the trustee. The trust stays revocable. Carolyn can fire the Navigators. She can fire Prinsner anytime she wants to. She can tell him or tell whoever it is, tell the Navigators what to do. She maintains complete ownership control. I think that's very important because he's a very competent, very intelligent individual. But she has the putting the navs between her and the assets in the trust gives her some protects her from the kids who want the inheritance, the relatives that want the loan. The insurance man says, well, you don't really want all this cash at one time, do you? Wouldn't you rather have interest on it? Just receive the interest? Which may be a good plan or plans, but it protects her from those pressures. She knows who to go to get counsel. And when Carolyn dies after me, and if the kids are under 32, the trust very specifically spells out how those assets will be managed and how they'll eventually be distributed during the lifetime of the kids, while they're in college, after they get out of college, and what happens when they turn age 32 or 35. I forgot what it is. We were debating back and forth when we set it up, which would be the magic age. And in that situation, our trust does call for a charitable distribution. Up until then, there's none. In addition to a living trust, you always have a will. Well, because there's always some... first of all, through a will, you name your executor and you name guardians for your kids. And for Carol and I, that's still an issue. Conrad's 15, Rochelle's 11. So we still have to name guardians. But you have to name your executor. And there will always be some assets outside of the will. Outside of the trust. Yeah, pardon me. Let's say I
do want distributed in
your death. Well... In our situation, what we did with the will, our will is a two-page document. Our wills, we both have separate wills. They're both two-page documents. And they simply name the executor, name the guardians, and tell the executor to settle the estate and give any excess funds to the trust for distribution or management. But you have to have a will because, I might die in a plane crash. I might die in a plane crash, and I'm immediately $75,000 from the airlines is part of my estate. The trust has no claim on it. Trust only manages things that are owned by the trust. That would be probated through my will, for example.
But your will has to interface with that living trust.
That's correct. Yeah, both have to be done.
Okay.
Both have to be done simultaneously, and they refer to each other. In fact, talking about the interface, what happens if you don't have enough assets to cover probate expenses outside of the trust? Well, the trust instructs the trustee to pay assets to the executor to cover any expenses that are needed, and then the will instructs the executor to pay any assets left over from the probate back to the trust. So they are reciprocal. But again, Bill will talk about that tomorrow, more in detail. That's correct. You have to have it has a great name. It's called a pour-over will. Pour-over will, because it pours assets into the trust once the probate process is finished. I love legal terms. Deep pockets. I think that's great. You know, who do you sue? The person's got deep pockets. Lots of money.
Russ,
sir. That's correct. That's correct. Okay? Be selective about investment advice. If at all possible, test your advisor with a small amount of money for a few years before committing to them. I was talking to a couple in Florida. All they had left was their home. And they had put all their assets, not sure how much, but apparently fairly, modestly significant, maybe under $100,000, with a Christian investment advisor. He invested it in limited partnerships that all had Christian purposes, and they all went bankrupt. Lost everything.
That story is repeated over and over and over again.
You mean with the investor or with the Christian?
Putting your money with a Christian investment.
Yeah, so be conservative. And just because he goes to your church and sings in the choir and doesn't mean he knows much about money, especially your money. Becoming a venture capitalist at age 65 is risky. But, yeah, a year to go, huh? At age 66, it's okay. In other words, again, be conservative. Be careful of unsecured loans to your adult children. I'd say insecure. So much for typing, right? No, seriously, be careful of unsecured loans. Now, it's okay to make a loan to your kids, but make it on a business-like basis. Take collateral. I do with Conrad. He's only 15. Yeah. Stereo, bicycle, whatever he happens to. No threats have worked. Yes. Unsecured loan. In other words, if your kids need a loan and you want to make them a loan, it's for a valid purpose, do it. But have a note drawn up and have security listed. Their home, their car. What?
Collateral.
There you go. Thank you. Why? Well, that gets into a very personal area, and it may be something you don't want to do, but what happens if I'm not an attorney here, so I may get a little far afield, but what happens if one of the kids passes away? The surviving spouse remarries. Or they both die in a common accident, and the guardian for the children take over the finances, And they're not sympathetic with the fact that you said, but we loaned our kids this money for this purpose, and they're supposed to pay us back. I mean, far-fetched situations, but not far-fetched, unlikely situations. Yet if they do happen, they could really work some hardships. Besides, I kind of like to put my kids, I'm not sure how successful I am, but I want to teach them what the real world is like as much as I can. And so if they want a loan, I'll loan it to them, but I'll have an attorney draw up the papers. It'll be a business deal. As you get closer to retirement, and when is that? Or the smaller your estate, and what is a small estate? Those are subjective criteria, obviously. Place a greater emphasis on liquidity. Raw land in Southern California may not be, or Phoenix, may not be the best investment for you at that time. A CD at the bank is very liquid, unless it's a 7-year CD or a 5-year CD. Then you're going to lose money to take it out. But on retirement, you might. Not on debt. On retirement. Hey, there are people, I've heard of people who lock their funds into a 5-year CD at age 63. And lo and behold, they're going to retire in 2 years, and suddenly they realize, oops, it's going to be a number of years before I can get those funds out of there without taking a loss. At middle age, whatever that is, 50% can be divided between equities, stocks, bonds, what have you, and or fixed income securities such as CDs. When approaching retirement, 75 should be in fixed income. The closer you are to retirement, the more liquid you should be, the more quickly you can get at your funds. What is a good criteria for a good investment? There it is. The investment that will let you get a good night's sleep. And that has to do with your risk tolerance. Okay? Steps to developing the financial plan. Establish realistic retirement goals. What do you want to accomplish? Or your retirement may include a ministry in Hong Kong, but what do you want? What are the costs? And that's a group decision. You and your spouse together. Prayerfully, carefully thought through. List the fair market value of assets that could be liquidated during retirement. List liabilities and obligations which need to be paid off when liquidating these assets. If you have a summer home someplace, in addition to or a cottage somewhere, and you plan to sell it in preparation for retirement, don't forget you may have a mortgage on it. Determine the future value of all your assets. Estimate the size of fund needed to achieve retirement income goal. Determine any amount needed for a contingency. Now, a contingency may not sound very spiritual. Well, what happens when the refrigerator goes out? Or the car throws a rod through the rear gas tank? They don't throw rods that far, but you have serious trouble. Determine the amount of additional assets needed to achieve retirement income goals and determine annual savings needed on a before or after tax basis. So that sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? Well, it isn't. But I put those up there to give you an idea that, or to illustrate from my perspective at least, that this is a fairly complex process. Yes. Yeah, it should be after tax. Sorry about that. Right here. Before, after tax basis. And the reason that is, that's so significant, if you're in the 15% tax bracket, year after next, whenever that comes in effect, that will have a significant impact with time on the amount of savings. Because if you have money in a CD at the bank and you're paying taxes on it, your savings are reduced by 15% or whatever the appropriate figure is on a annual basis. If it's in an IRA or a TSA or some sort of a deferred tax-deferred program, the interest, well, not only is not the interest reduced by taxes when you place it in, but also the income is not reduced, and the compounding effect is far, far greater over a period of time, even in, say, a 3 or 4 year period. This is a little study I updated. Using some average figures. Let's say that the illustration I used before of making $30,000 a year, that's my current income. I'm age 60, and I do plan to retire 100% for the Navigators at age 65. Well, that's 1992. At 5%, assuming that there's a 5% inflation, which is, I think, a reasonable assumption, what will be my income in 1992? $38,000. Making $30,000 this year, if I'm on the same salary scale, just adjusted for 5% inflation a year, I should be making $38,000 that year. Make sense? Okay. Using some averages, based on that $38,000, my Navigator pension could be in the neighborhood, or let's say I've talked to Hilda, she's worked out the figures, and it will be $10,800. And my Social Security benefits, we've checked with the Social Security, and based on everything that they know and I know, they'll be paying me $9,600 a year, which totals $20,400. That'll be my total retirement income. Or total retirement benefits. Now let's say I believe in averages, faithfully, but I'm kind of liberal in my thinking, so I'm going to choose the 80%. Remember, I said that 80% could be a real trap, or using averages could be a real trap, because I need to determine exactly how much income I need. I imagine Roy Robertson may need a little more money in Hong Kong than he has needed in Indonesia. His retirement income needs probably are going up, not down. Is that, you follow that illustration? Okay. So using percentages could be a trap, but let's use them for illustration purposes. To maintain my current lifestyle, if I need 80% of $38,000, I will need $30,400. Income. I have a shortfall of $10,000 a year. How would I make up that shortfall? Well, various approaches, but assuming retirement in 5 years, assuming a 5% inflation rate, assuming a 7% before tax return on investments, other words, I'm quite confident, as I do my planning, that I could make 7% on my on any investment I have before taxes are taken out. And assuming that at age 65, my wife and I have a joint life expectancy of 25 years, reasonable assumption. You follow me by a joint life expectancy? That both of us, that one of us will survive for 25 years. Both of us for a period of time. And assuming that I need a $10,000 contingency fund in 86, and I should have said $87, sorry about that, didn't update that one. The lump sum I will need at retirement to provide 10,000, whatever that figure was, $10,000 a year for 25 years is $48,000, 48.3. Oh, pardon me, I'm sorry. Well, okay, I will need to save $11,000 a year in the next 5 years to have sufficient assets to meet my retirement predictions or expectations as I look at them now. Any questions on that? That plus the earnings on it. There's something wrong here, and I. Yeah, there's something wrong. I'm not sure what it is. I checked the figures before I came up, but the $11,000 a year savings. Yeah, there. Pardon me for the error. There's something wrong with the figures, and I may just be blocking on something. The illustration is accurate. I mean, this is a way to determine the amount of savings that will be needed in the future to cover a retirement need of $10,000 a year, or whatever your retirement need happens to be. For an investment to generate $10,000 a year income to use up the lump sum would generate $10,000 a year and be it would be depleted in 25 years. Sure. Yes.
So, the word the person living on a tax deferred basis could not save $11,500 more.
Jerry, is that limit includes IRAs, TSAs, and deferred comp?
Because there are other factors that are into that, but that's the absolute ceiling.
per salary.
No, because that's
But Hilda, is it is that a cumulative limit? Well, does it? Do you have to take into consideration what you're putting in for an IRA and for a TSA and for your deferred comp and the maximum? I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
I don't know about deferred comp. It's possible that deferred comp contributions also have some
Russ, could you, I suppose it's you that means that like lump sum would have been retirement through present value, future value.
That's correct.
Would you want to just explain a little bit about that and how, where they would go? Because most people, I'd say, have
Okay. Well, Jerry's comment or question was where it boiled down to, in effect, where could you go to get counsel or a resource to help you with your planning? Is that a fair? All right. There are a multiplicity of financial planners out there who would be eager to assist you in your retirement planning or in your financial planning. Take a look at your insurance and your goals and your investments in terms of what you wanted, and in view of what you wanted to accomplish, come up with a recommendation to you as to what you could do to achieve those goals. And some of them would also have products they could sell you that would help you achieve those goals. Some of those people are very competent, very honest, and know what they're talking about and are to be trusted. And some of them are not all that competent and may not be all that honest or may not have that much training. In most states, in fact, I think in all states, you can hang out the shingle of a financial planner and not meet any criteria. So, if you would like to, I would be happy to assist you in the area. Now, you may know of someone in this area. You may know of someone that you have confidence in and you relate well to and are already working with that you'd want to work with, and that'd be fine. But if you don't know someone, you want some basic information and some interaction on the subject, I would be happy to be available. Okay? A couple more things to cover. In your handout, there's a breakdown of how the average 65-year-old couple spends their money. Again, you've got to watch out for that term average. There's no such thing. At least there's no averages here, right? But I find very often people do get a sense of the relationship between what they're doing and what somebody else is doing does give them some degree, a good degree of confidence or challenges their thinking. And again, you may find these percentages really off from your perspective, and there could be good reason for that. But at least it gives you a point of departure. Everything. Utilities, insurance, mortgage. I was surprised at the high 5% gifts, but that may include gifts to family. It may not just be charitable gifts. I mentioned I'd talk a bit about investments. This is a kind of a standard illustration. the higher you are on the pyramid, the increasing reward through appreciation. Obviously, you're going to probably do make. You have the potential of making a lot more money. Growth mutual fund than you do in your checking account. The problem is, as you go up the scale, the increasing risk of loss, or the risk of loss increases proportionately. Now, when you talk about loss, unless a person really invests in something that he shouldn't have invested in, more than likely he's not going to lose his assets. But the market dropped, 40 points today? 40, 50 points today in that area? It went up 60 points yesterday.
Dropped 50 today.
50 today. Today would be a very poor day to sell your mutual fund that you bought yesterday. Why? Because you'd feel badly about it. And to me, that's a more significant area of risk than the economy collapsing. The economy could collapse, and there are people who make a lot of money talking about that. But I think if the economy collapses, it'll all collapse together. We'll all be in the same boat. So not much I can do about that. But in terms of limiting your risk as you get closer to retirement, the amount of assets you have higher on the scale should be moved lower. And that's a subjective decision, because what is risk to me may not be risk to you, and what's risk to you may not be risk to me. Some of you here may be involved in commodities. Now, if I was involved in commodities, I really couldn't sleep at night. These are personal decisions based on your own personal criteria.
Russ, what does it mean to have the economy collapse?
Have the economy collapse? Depression. 1929, over again. That's right. It could happen again. Commodities. Well, a commodity is an asset. Like gold. Gold is a commodity, which is a little contradictory because I have gold up there in a lower area. If you buy wheat on the market, and take a look at the economic report of the government, the farm reports and so on and so forth, and you perceive what the wheat crop is going to be and what the market's going to be and what the value of a bushel is going to be, you bet. You make a guess to buy or sell an asset at a certain price. And depending on how the market goes, and it's very volatile, wildly volatile. Wildly volatile. Yes? I missed the last part of your question. No, tax shelter. That tax shelter is really a limited partnership, and a limited partnership would be tax shelters in that situation were designed to lose money, and when you lost money, you could write it off your taxes, and some of them have been exceptionally effective in losing money. They're high risk, very high risk. TSA, it depends on where you put the TSA is an umbrella. Now this is actually the area that Hilda is an expert in, and Jerry. But a TSA is an umbrella, and you can put your TSA funds in a number of different funds. You can put them in a money market. You can put them in a fixed rate. You can put them in a mutual fund. TSA would be more secure, and it would tend to be in this area down here, yes. Option income program. Options are sort of similar to commodities. It's not an area that I work in, or I'm not that familiar with. For most of us, our investments are probably in the area of CDs, our home, and mutual funds. There may be some stock investors here, and if you are, that's great. But for most of us, most people, I think mutual funds are a more acceptable area. Other questions? No, I think those are phased. I think they're called Series E now, if I recall correctly. They were a great investment 6 months ago.
6 months ago?
Yep, they were outstanding. They were paying, what, 9%? They were paying 9%, and when everybody else was paying around 6%, Congress finally said, oops, and dropped the interest rate for all bonds sold in the future to, I think it's 7 now, I forgot what it is. Tomorrow, Bill will be handing out an estate planning inventory for those of you who are interested. And if you'd like my assistance, I'll use the same information on that inventory. I won't do it unless you ask me to, by the way. But I'd be glad to interact with you by mail and by phone and next time I'm in your area and so on. Those of you who live outside of Colorado Springs. I wouldn't think so, no. No, definitely not half. But again, it depends. Well, again, a widow with kids, without kids, a widow working, not working, a widow with health problems, without health problems, or a widower, you know, a single spouse, with or without. There's so many variables that it's hard to say, but I would say definitely not half. In fact, I would say probably pretty close, because you may not sell the house. You probably keep the car. Husbands don't eat that much. Some husbands don't eat that much. But you know, so the costs really aren't that much less. But I think the benefit of going through the exercise of sitting down with your spouse and talking about these things and going over them and making some decisions, and then a year from now or 6 months from now going back and evaluating them. And by the way, I should add, a financial plan isn't like the laws of the Medes and Persians. You know, once you set it, you need to reevaluate it, and really they should be updated on a yearly basis. At least a yearly basis. Well, I hope I've been helpful. And sorry for the messed up illustration, but I'll try to figure out what I did.
So that's not a valid... saying that's not a valid...
It's supposed to be valid, but I'm blocking on it, and I don't know... I'm not sure there is a mistake, and I don't understand whether it's mentally or on paper. So... you need to save. You need to set your goals, your financial goals for retirement, or whatever you want to call that. And then you need to, and you may need to save funds, or you may need to have assets to help you reach those goals. Now, you may already have the assets. That's possible. You may have equity in your home. You might have some other investments. So, and those will reduce the amount of savings. And this illustration assumed there were no savings. The person had zero assets. They were renters, and they needed to. You bet. Okay. Thank you all very much, Jerry.